WORT would like to thank the following local restaurants and businesses who provided meals for our hardworking volunteers during our recent fall pledge drive. Bandung, Bonzo, Cardinal Bar, Cooper's Tavern, Einstein's Coffee and Bagels, Epic Mortgage Lending, Festival Foods, Glass Nickel Pizza West, Hong Kong Cafe, Ian's Pizza, Just Veggies, Lao Lang Zan, Mickey's Tavern, Melio's on MLK, Original Pancake House on University Avenue, Pizza Bruta, Soups I Did It Again in Spring Green, Teddy Wedgers, Weary Traveler, Wilma's Fund LGBT Assistance, and the Willie Street Co-op. WORT would like to extend our gratitude to these restaurants for helping put the community in WORT Community Radio through their donations of food. Gratefully yours for nearly five decades, this is WORT 89.9 FM, Madison.
Hello, I'm Roisin Hasty with the BBC News. Security sources in Pakistan say 190 train passengers have been freed after being taken hostage by gunmen in the southwest. The sources say the operation is slow as the ethnic Baloch rebels are using civilians as human shields. Ambrasan Etirajan reports.
Reports say some hostages have been taken into the mountains, but all the emerging accounts are hard to verify. The train was carrying more than 400 people when armed men blew up the tracks and opened fire near a mountain tunnel in Balochistan. It's unknown how many hostages are still being held. The Baloch Liberation Army is demanding the release of political prisoners it claims are being held by the Pakistani military. It's one of the most active militant organizations demanding independence for the mineral-rich province.
The U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio has said Ukraine's long-term security will depend upon a sufficient deterrent against future Russian attacks.
Like any country in the world, Ukraine wants their long-term security. They want to make sure that this doesn't happen again. We all do. I mean, what is the point of spending all this time to get a ceasefire, hopefully, and then a negotiated end of the war, only to see it re-spark up again in about 6 years, 4 years, 3 years?
Mr. Rubio said that a minerals deal between the US and Ukraine would give Washington a vested economic and protectional interest, but stopped short of calling it a security guarantee. Mr. Rubio urged the Russians to consider ending all hostilities. Earlier, Moscow said it wouldn't comment on a US proposal for a 30-day ceasefire. Dmitry Peskov is the Kremlin spokesman.
You're getting a little ahead of yourself. Rubio and Waltz said that they would pass on to us detailed information about the conversations in Jeddah. First, we must receive this information. We also have contacts planned with the Americans in the coming days.
The opposition Democratic Party in Greenland has won the general election with almost 30% of the vote. The centre-right party, which favours a slow approach to gaining independence from Denmark, more than tripled its result from the last election. The party has previously criticised President Trump's comments about taking over Greenland, saying, "We are not for sale." Greenland's main political parties support independence, but they disagree on the timeframe. President Trump's Middle East envoy Steve Witkoff is in Qatar for indirect talks between Israel and Hamas aimed at extending the Gaza ceasefire. Israel wants a two-month extension, starting with the release of about half of the living hostages still held. Hamas wants immediate talks on the second phase of the original ceasefire deal, which would lead to an end to the war. World News from the BBC.
Do you find yourself more enraged with every news headline?
Do you have crippling anxiety when you see pictures of starving polar bears on melting icebergs?
Are you shaking your fists at every new threat to bodily autonomy?
If you answered yes to these questions, we have an answer for you. Her Turn, WORT's feminist news, airs every Sunday at 11 a.m., and the collective is looking for new volunteers to join us.
No previous experience needed, just a commitment to feminist news and a willingness to bring more women's voices to the radio. Call 608-256-2001 and say you want to volunteer on Her Turn.
Turn your anger into action. Turn your anxiety into hopefulness. Turn your discouragement into power. Volunteer with Her Turn right here on WORT Madison and make your woman's voice heard.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and TNW Ensemble Theater, presenting Scammed, a new comedy running March 13th through March 23rd at TNW Ensemble Theater, 1957 Winnebago Street. When a freelancing editor falls for a classic scam, she assumes the amoral alter ego of Helen Wheels to get even. Tickets are available at the door with cash or check, or online through Ticket Tailor. More information is available by calling 608-770-0826.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Bluestem Jazz, presenting Twin Talk at the North Street Cabaret on Friday, March 21st at 8 p.m. Chicago's Twin Talk, featuring saxophonist Dustin Lorenzi, bassist singer Katie Ernst, and drummer Andrew Green, create a style that is elastic, spontaneous, and open. More information and tickets are available at bluestemjazz.org.
Good morning. It is Wednesday, March 12th, and this is the 8 o'clock buzz. I'm Jan Miyasaki. This morning, I'll be speaking with Karen Dolan. Karen Dolan is a fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies, where she directs the Criminalization of Race and Poverty Project. So last week, Repairers of the Breach, in partnership with the Institute for Policy Studies and the Economic Policy Institute, published a powerful new report, The High Moral Stake: Our Budget, Our Future. And the report examines the dangerous budget cuts being proposed by the administration and Congress and how these cuts will impact the nation as a whole and in particular our most vulnerable. So stay tuned to hear from Karen Dolan, one of the researchers of the report. Then later I'll be speaking with Mary Grant. Mary Grant is the Public Water for All Director at Food and Water Watch. So Food and Water Watch says the continuing resolution to fund the federal government through September 30th is not a, quote, clean continuing resolution. It increases funding for deportations and defense while cutting or eliminating funding for clean water programs and rural water and wastewater projects. So I'll be talking with Mary Grant about these cuts and others, including the proposal by DOGE to cut the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, by 65%. So stay tuned to hear from Mary Grant. And then later from Wart News, yesterday, UW-Madison students staged walkout in support of Mahmoud Khalil. So we'll replay that as well this morning. Stay tuned to the program. We'll be right back.
Nights of quiet stars, quiet chords from my guitar, floating on the silence that surrounds us. Quiet thoughts and quiet dreams, quiet walks by quiet streams, and a window that looks out on Corcovado. Oh, how lovely.
Esse amor, uma canção pra fazer feliz a quem se ama. Muita calma pra pensar e ter tempo pra sonhar. Da janela ver seu Corcovado, o Redentor, que lindo. Quero a vida sempre assim, com você perto de mim, até o apagar da velha chama.
It's just about 10 minutes after 8, and joining me is Karen Dolan. Karen Dolan is a fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies, where she directs the Criminalization of Race and Poverty Project. So last week, the Repairers of the Breach, in partnership with the Institute for Policy Studies and the Economic Policy Institute published a powerful new report on the high moral stakes of the policy battles raging in Washington. And the report examines the dangerous budget cuts being proposed by the administration and Congress, and how, and the analysis of how these cuts will impact the nation as a whole and the most vulnerable communities. So, hey, Karen Dolan, welcome back. It's great to have you on.
Thanks so much for having me, Jan.
Hey, Karen, so can you start with this partnership with the Repairers of the Breach, IPS, and the Economic Policy Institute, holding an important press conference last week to talk about this report? But can you talk about that partnership?
Sure. So the Institute for Policy Studies and the Economic Policy Institute have engaged in assisting faith leaders led by Reverend William Barber for many years, looking at the impacts, especially to poor and low-wealth individuals in the country, but also looking at the values that our policies and our budget express. So a federal budget is really a moral agenda. It is an expression of the values that the nation holds. And we and faith leaders across the country that are part of Repairers of the Breach and many other faith leaders believe that such a document, such a budget, such a moral agenda should stand against systemic racism, should stand against labor exploitation, should stand against poverty, xenophobia, and any attempt to promote hate towards any members of the human family.
Now, I think this is, you know, an important lens that we have to always look through for our, you know, budgets and policy decisions. And so can you talk about some of the key takeaways of the report? Start where you think, it's also important, but you pick where you want to start.
Sure. I would start also by saying, you know, the way I think most people agree that we want a budget that expresses these moral values, these humanistic values, values of standing against hatred and trying to protect against poverty and racism. And what we see from both this budget reconciliation process, which is kind of complicated, but there's one track of the budget that's going forward that we've highlighted in this report that will play out over the coming months. And then there's a separate budget process that's happening in Washington, D.C. this week that keeps the government funded. So those are two different budget processes, and I can talk about the differences between each. But what they have in common is that they do not express those values. Instead, both cut programs to poor and low-income people, and they cut programs to families and communities for everything from healthcare to food to transportation to air safety, infrastructure, to broadband access, all in the name of transferring our tax dollars to the very wealthy and big corporations in the form of tax cuts. So that doesn't seem to express a value of caring about families and communities. It seems to express the so-called value of taking care of those who are already wealthy and the biggest corporations. So with that as a framework, I can talk about some of the findings that we have in this report that have to do with this longer term budget process called budget reconciliation. And the budget reconciliation process is a process that's very attractive to a party when one party holds the House, the Senate, and the White House, as the Republicans do now. The reason for that is because it is a process that allows the Senate to get around the filibuster that would require Democratic participation. So this is a budget that can be passed completely with Republican votes. So it is highly partisan. It doesn't attempt to be partisan because it doesn't require any votes from the other party. So because of that, what you see is kind of, not only a wish list from this approach that hurts families and communities in order to support the wealthy, not just a wish list, but one that can be enacted. Cuts that will be enacted on top of those cuts that are being enacted this week. So this looks at the big programs, what we call mandatory programs, the programs that go ahead and they are funded regardless of whether Congress acts every year. When Congress acts every year, they act on something called the discretionary budget, education, infrastructure, Veterans Affairs. That's what's being voted on this week. This longer process is what we call mandatory spending, Medicaid, Medicare, SNAP or food stamps, TANF, which is the cash welfare program, and also Social Security. However, Social Security, for complicated reasons, is exempted from the budget resolution process, but it is also under attack from other threats. So we also have to keep in mind there are other threats that we also address in the report that I can get to. But when you look at the major, the major cuts that are on the table that will affect millions of us, first of all, the proposal from the Republican House is to slash Medicaid by $880 billion over the next 9 years or until 2034. And Medicaid covers 72 million people. You know, it covers people with disabilities. It covers people with lower incomes. It covers seniors. In Wisconsin alone, over 1 million people receive Medicaid. So it's almost 20% of the population of Wisconsin receives Medicaid. So when you slash it to that extent, people lose coverage, they lose benefits. There's proposals to cap the kinds of benefits that people can receive, to restrict eligibility, to add work requirements, when already 92% of people who are on Medicaid either work full-time or part-time, or they're enrolled in schools, or they're taking care of elderly or children, or they are disabled or suffering illness themselves. So we already have 92% of those enrolled in Medicaid who are complying in that way. So new work requirements would simply raise those stakes and kick people off of Medicaid who qualify and who are working already. Then there's a proposal to slash food stamps, SNAP, which is food assistance largely for children, for families, so that they can have nutritious meals. And the proposal is to slash that by $230 billion from now until 2034. That covers 40 million people and potentially affecting all 40 million covered people would either see lost benefits or reduced benefits. We're talking about food and health care here. And why are we talking about cutting access to food and health care? Again, so that money can be transferred into massive tax cuts for billionaires and the biggest corporations. So think about that for a moment.
And these cuts would affect millions in red states as well as blue states.
Oh, sure. Of course. Even more in red states.
Yes, even more.
So there are some, there's some smoke and mirrors that you'll hear from the Republicans where they try to say, oh, these aren't cuts. This is waste, fraud, and abuse. Well, the Medicaid system has been demonstrated to have about 1% of of payments that are improper, and most of those are through some kind of technical glitches, and those can be addressed. That's 1%. That's not $880 billion worth of waste, fraud, and abuse. $880 billion is what funds the benefits that we get. And know this, cuts to Medicaid are also cuts to Medicare, because there's over 12 million seniors that are duly enrolled in Medicaid and Medicare and people with disabilities, because Medicaid offers things that Medicare does not, like hearing, dental, vision, in-home care, long-term care, community-based care, nursing homes. Over 60% of people in nursing homes are funded through Medicaid. So when they say we're not touching Social Security or Medicare, that is not true. A cut to Medicaid is a cut to Medicare. And with regard to Social Security, it is through the tricky rules in the Senate, Social Security cannot be addressed through the budget reconciliation process. However, as you know from reading the headlines, Trump and Musk have been trying to say that Social Security is a Ponzi scheme, that it's rife with waste, fraud, and abuse. That is such an easy thing to say, waste, fraud, and abuse. Look at the data. The data said there's less than 5% of waste, fraud, and abuse. There's waste, fraud, and abuse in everything, namely the Pentagon. The Pentagon has massive waste, fraud, and abuse, but that's the one program that is getting increased funding. So when you look at Social Security and you're being told that it's waste, fraud, and abuse, it's being set up to be cut. It's being set up to be privatized. They have slashed the workforce, the federal workforce for Social Security. These are the people who process the Social Security checks, who get them in the mail, who field the calls, who help people with disabilities. Those people are going to be gone. Yes. So even though Social Security isn't on the chopping block in the budget reconciliation process, it is in other ways.
And these cuts would also result in the closure of medical facilities, right?
Yes, very importantly, the closure. Thank you so much for bringing that up. Very importantly, it can result in the closing of hospitals, clinics, especially in rural areas. There are a lot of rural areas in red states, and of course in blue states as well. So rural hospitals and rural health clinics have already been under the gun for years for lack of funding. Now, once you slash this Medicaid funding, these hospitals will simply close. They'll have to close. There was a study out of Boston it would be catastrophic for people who live in rural areas. They wouldn't have access to hospitals and healthcare. So these are dire. This has nothing to do with waste, fraud, and abuse. This has everything to do with transferring our tax dollars from our families and our communities straight into the pockets of billionaires and large corporations.
Now, there are other aspects of looking at the budget through the lens of labor protections and employment and wages. I wanted to talk a little bit about that, but I definitely want to come back to, the benefits and the giveaways, ultimately, what this is designed to achieve. But can you talk about the impact on employment, wages, and labor protections?
Yes. So this is also an attack on all of those things that you said, for the ability of people to join unions, to collectively bargain, so that they have real living wages, so that they can live, so that they have labor rights protections. So the threats are coming from this administration that simply doesn't believe in workers' rights to organize for labor rights. We have 10% of the workforce are paid less than $15 per hour. So this is why workers have to work two and three jobs just to get by. And they're against raising the minimum wage. The federal workforce has been slashed. That decimates public services and public jobs. It especially affects Black workers disproportionately, people with disabilities disproportionately. They have a trade policy that's centered on these retaliatory tariffs that will raise consumer prices, that will make the economy even more uncertain. And that adds to our tax burden. So whereas the wealthiest are going to get tax relief, massive tax relief, those of us in the middle and the lowest 20% of income workers, the middle 20 and the lowest 20, we're going to see an additional tax burden when you factor in the tariffs that President Trump is embarking on. We've also seen a gutting of the National Labor Relations Board, and that is what supports workers' rights and gives us a chance to fight for a living wage, to fight for safe workplaces. Among the people that the new regime has illegally taken out of their federal jobs is the removal of the National Labor Relations Board chair, so that body that works to support workers, that's their sole purpose, they have no chair, they have no quorum, and they can't act. At the same time, they're dismantling the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. So wherever you look, consumers, workers, we're right now with no place to go when injustices are done to us. In addition to that, if it's okay to move on to what's happening with immigrants and mass deportations. So in addition to the two places that these budgets add money is to the Pentagon, adding billions, hundreds of billions to the Pentagon, the House. It's up to, when you look at the Pentagon and all the related militaristic programs, you know, you get up to 375 proposed additions to the Pentagon budget and to border security to fund mass deportations and detentions. We know that the Pentagon budget is rife with waste, fraud, and abuse, and we know that those monies go mostly into the defense industry more so than into any concept of real security. So our security is the strength of our families and our communities. Our security is the strength of our allies abroad. Our security is the strength of being good neighbors and good stewards and leadership in this country that values human beings. This budget resolution reconciliation process and the current budget that's going through Congress this week acts in completely the opposite way. So we've got more, you know, billions, hundreds of billions of dollars more to go after immigrants who enrich our communities, who pay billions of dollars in taxes, and they don't get in response. If you're undocumented, you're paying into the system, but you're not able to access any social programs. So it's incorrect. It's a lie when you hear that undocumented workers are getting all these services. They're not. They're not eligible, yet they're paying for them. So they're actually subsidizing us. So they're trying to deport, Trump has said, up to 11 million undocumented people. Well, of course, that's going to raise consumer prices. They're picking the strawberries and they're picking the tomatoes and they're working under horrendous conditions with no labor protections in factories. We should be finding a way for a legal status for the people who are working so hard for us in this country. And we have about 4.5 million children who have one undocumented parent. And so you're trying to break up families or deport whole families so that they can stay together. We've got, you know, over 1,300 immigrant children who were separated from their families during the first Trump administration who have never been reunited with their families. We've got an executive order that says that you can barge into churches, schools, hospitals, domestic violence centers where women who have experienced domestic violence are seeking shelter, that they can go in there and round people up and deport them, to end birthright citizenship. I mean, it's really inhumane.
And this budget...
Just on a practical purpose, it could raise consumer prices by close to 10%.
And again, giving greater tax giveaways to billionaires, but decreasing tax credits for the poor or the low income, right?
Exactly. It's all in the service of that agenda.
So the White House, the Congress, all in the hands of one party. That's where we started. You know, people will understand this. What to do about it, I guess.
Well, what to do about it is to stand up every day, join every protest you see, call your congresspersons and senators daily, write to them. There's a website, 5calls.org. It's the number 5. Numeric number 5calls.org, and that will give you the numbers of your congresspeople, your senators. It will give you different issue areas and scripts. We have to be loud. This is the time. Nobody can be silent. Nobody can look the other way. And anyone who thinks they won't be affected is wrong. Once you start defying the Constitution, taking away civil rights, human rights, civil liberties, the things that are afforded to us by protections in the Constitution, nobody is safe. And call, you know, Republicans, Democrats alike, Democrats have to know that we're watching them. They should not. There are Democrats in the Senate this week who will be voting for the government spending bill that continues the cutting of our services, the slashing of our services, and handing over authority to the executive branch and taking it away from our elected officials. Our elected congresspeople and senators are supposed to decide where the money goes.
You know, and discussing this from the moral standpoint is nonpartisan, right? This is not a partisan issue. I think folks should be.
Well, that's right. It's not a partisan issue at all.
Yes.
The reconciliation bill is a partisan bill, but the values, the morality, investing in communities and families is a nonpartisan issue. It's a human issue.
Then folks, you know, can be joining together with this information with their faith communities and, you know, asking questions and, you know, asking for answers.
That's right. I would recommend everybody go to breachrepairs.org or ips-dc.org and download the report. I think it's only about 9 pages. There's also a 2-page summary that's very handy. Then take that into your place of worship, whatever that might be. Take it on the street. Take it into your workplace. Hand out the 2-pager. Let people know what's going on.
You know,
arm people with information.
That's right. That's right. That's what we need. We need facts because there is a lot out there that is misinformation. I'm speaking with Karen Dolan. She's a fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies, where she directs the Criminalization of Race and Poverty Project there. The report is a partnership with Repairs of the Breach, Institute for Policy Studies, and the Economic Policy Institute on the high moral stakes of the policy battles that are raging in Washington. And these are just great documents. There's that two-sheeter that Karen mentioned, and then there's the full version that isn't too long. It's only 12 pages and goes more in-depth into the analysis of the impact of these proposed budget cuts on all of us. Hey, Karen, it was great to talk with you. Before we say so long for this morning. You know, it just seems like a uphill battle, right?
It's an uphill battle, but we've been worse off in our history before. And we are the people who decide. This still is a democracy. We decide. We choose what happens next. We do that if we all stand up together.
Thank you. Thank you, Karen. Karen Dolan from the Institute for Policy Studies. We'll have to talk with you again soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Jan.
It is 8:35. We're going to take a short break, and then I'm standing by is Mary Grant from Food and Water Watch.
Be wise, be fair, be sure, be there, behave, beware. Be wise, be smart, behave, my heart. Don't upset your cart when she's so close.
And it is 8:36. Thank you to Mary Grant for standing by. Mary Grant is the Public Water for All Director at Food and Water Watch. So Food and Water Watch says the continuing resolution to fund the federal government through the 30th of September is not a, quote, clean continuing resolution. It increases funding for deportations and defense while cutting or eliminating entirely funding for clean water programs and rural water and wastewater projects. I wanted to talk with her about this. You know, also the proposal by DOJ to cut the EPA by 65%. So it's just a lot to talk about. Good morning, Mary Grant. Good to have you on.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, so Mary, maybe we'll start with the continuing resolution, and then we'll look at the longer reconciliation budget process. But inside of the continuing resolution am I reading that correctly? Are cuts to clean water programs?
Yeah, so the House Republicans passed it through mostly on a party line bill yesterday evening. It was supposed, they touted as a clean continuing resolution and extension of funding, but they actually have cuts in it. And most notably, one of the big cuts is for rural water and wastewater projects at USDA. They're taking a 20% cut. So cutting $117 million from that USDA program to help rural households fix their water systems and wastewater systems, install septic systems. That's a pretty big cut for rural water. And then there's also a massive cut, in particular at the Army Corps, a $1.4 billion cut to the Army Corps' construction budget. The Army Corps does projects like flood control, waterway projects. It protects ecosystems. There's also cuts to funding for agricultural programs, too. It cuts millions of dollars from USDA's conservation program for farmers. And it also cuts millions from the Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service at USDA, which is one of the key agencies that's charged with responding to the bird flu. So there are cuts in the spending bill. It's not a clean CR. It's a dirty bill that will slash funding for essential food, agricultural, and water projects.
So it makes substantial cuts and zeros out some important rural wastewater and water clean water projects, right?
Yeah, it zeros out all earmarks from the previous spending bill. There were billions of dollars of earmarks requested by House members across the country. In every state but North Dakota, they requested billions of dollars of projects for local, like congressionally directed projects in their local district. Much of that is for clean water projects. And it zeroes out all of those congressionally directed projects. This, in turn, takes away control from Congress to tell EPA and USDA and other agencies where to direct that money. So it's a power grab by the Trump administration in a way. They're ceding control, more control to the Trump administration to direct where those dollars go.
And these funds are important in both red and blue states, right? And impact greatly red states.
Absolutely. Usually the state revolving fund program has broad bipartisan support. This is the main source of federal funding for local water and wastewater projects. It's a pretty small program on the scale of the federal government, but it is the main source of federal funding, and it's a partnership between the federal government, states, and local governments. All of this money eventually ends up in the hands of local governments to improve and local water systems to improve our water systems, to keep our water clean and safe for people.
So how do y'all at Food and Water Watch, understand how this even, happens, that they call it a clean continuing resolution, and that all these folks kind of just voted against party line, but I think maybe one or two, one person on each side?
Yeah, there's one from each who switched sides. I think they're saying there's no poison pills involved in it. They're not putting in policy writers. So they're calling it a clean bill because they don't have policy writers that they have previously tried to attach to funding bills. But it's not a clean bill, and we think that it's really important for the Senate to know that, and it's the one chance that the Senate can actually step up and stop this, rework the deal to actually fully fund our government and also try to rein in some of the illegal actions of Musk and Trump. This is one of the key and maybe one of the only opportunities the Senate has in the coming months to try to rein in these actions, this dismantling of the federal government, the elimination of programs that Congress established, the illegal firings, mass firings of the federal workforce. This is their one opportunity for the Senate to actually step up. The spending bill requires 60 votes in the Senate, so they will need Democrat support in the Senate. And the House, they passed it mostly along party lines. They did not try to negotiate with the House Democrats. But in the Senate, this House bill is very partisan. They should reject it out of hand and rework it so that it is shorter. It tries to rein, it extends it cleanly, funding cleanly, and it begins to rein in that Trump and Musk illegal actions.
And, Republicans and Democrats alike should be contacting their representatives in the Senate, regardless of party, right? Because it doesn't make sense to me that these issues should be nonpartisan.
Absolutely. And if you want to call your senator, we have a call line set up, 877-247-1820. You can give a call to this your senator and ask them to reject this dirty spending bill and to work to pass a real bill that will fully fund our government and keep these essential programs open and working for people, because it is a bipartisan issue, as you say. Everyone needs safe water. Everyone needs safe food. We need the federal government to be fully funded, fully staffed, so that we can have safe communities, safe waterways, healthy water, safe water at home, and healthy food.
Now, the longer-term plan by the Musk-Trump plan to gut the EPA, can you talk about that?
Yeah, so they announced a plan to cut the budget of EPA by 65%, which is devastating when you think about it. Much of EPA, what EPA does, is support the work of states and local governments. So 40% of EPA's entire budget is just local grants, much of it for those clean water projects. They also have the Superfund. So only about 40% is just regular operations at EPA. So they cannot cut EPA's budget by eliminating just the operations staff. They can eliminate all the workers at EPA, and they still couldn't get to 65% budget cut. That budget cut is going to come out of that support for local governments, for states, to keep our waterways safe, our environment healthy, and safe for people. So it's going to come at the expense of essential protections for clean water.
I mean, this would have immediate and really serious repercussions on our health, right?
It would. It would be devastating for communities across the country and every state and rural communities, urban communities. Everyone relies on support from the federal government to keep our environment clean, our air safe to breathe, our water safe to drink. It will have really devastating consequences. I think part of the issue is people don't realize the impact of the federal government and the federal workforce, how much they do. A lot of that work is to support the efforts that states are doing. So there's this this mantra that we're hearing that, like, we'll just turn it back to the states. The states are doing a lot of this already, but they're doing it with the support of the federal government. So all you're doing is taking away that support that the states need to provide environmental regulations and environmental protections to keep our environment safe for people.
And you know, for me, more and more, this is becoming clearer to me that this is designed to result in the privatization of a lot of things, including our water. What's Food and Water Watch has been talking about that as well, right?
Yeah, so that's kind of, it's a playbook. We've seen this before. It's a playbook. What we see is that the first step is to dismantle government, right? You make it not work. You cut it back. You don't fund it properly. Then it's not working, right? And everyone's complaining. And then you privatize it. This is an excuse to privatize it. It's looting the federal government. It's fleecing the people. And it's leading to privatization of our essential government functions. We see this with water privatization all the time. Often, a mayor will be bought into the idea of selling off the water system to avoid tax increases, right? This is a really common thing we see across from both sides of the aisle. It's something we see at the local level, this idea that we can just sell off the water system to avoid raising taxes to fund other government services or to pay for other obligations. And what happens is they'll stop funding water for a while, right? And it'll lead to, like, water quality violations, water problems, water main breaks. And people will be like, it's not working. Government's not working. And so it fuels that drive to privatize the system. And then we see a private company will swoop in, offer large sums of cash in exchange for the system. But at the end of the day, what happens is people are fleeced. They're ripped off. People are ripped off with massive rate increases to their water bills. And this having this happen at a time when we're experiencing the price of everything increase, the price of food increase, to have, like, the price of water increase double, triple, just to pad the pockets of a private corporation, it's outrageous, but it's also dangerous, right? Because what happens when people get water bills they can't afford to pay? The private company is going to shut you off. People could lose access to safe water under this privatization regime and scheme. So this is very dangerous for public health. Having access to safe, reliable water is one of the basic services of government. And so it's so important that every level of government is fully funded, fully supported, because that's what government's about, is making sure people have access to these essentials that we need to live, safe water for everyone.
The possibility of, you know, the private sector, you know, wanting to drive up the value of their shares, for instance, but spending a whole lot less on, you know, keeping our water safe, is not hard to believe that potential exists if we don't stop this.
Mm-hmm. They're cut corners to drive up profit. They increase rates dramatically on households. And we hear mostly from seniors after their water system has been privatized that their water bill has doubled, tripled. And they don't know what's going on. Why did it change when their service has not improved at all? Or sometimes it's gotten worse. And it's because of that privatization of their system.
So at Food and Water Watch, are you, we're looking at the continuing resolution, not clean, dirty. It's in the Senate now, and then there's the budget reconciliation. You know, do you have any action recommendations that folks can take? Because it really seems like the deck is stacked.
So the spending bill right now, it's at the Senate. So we are urging people to call their senators. Again, that's 877-247-1820. Tell them to reject this dirty spending bill, to pass something that really will make sure that the entire government is kept open. Because what we're seeing also is that because of Musk and Trump, we're already seeing a federal government shutdown, an illegal federal government shutdown that could be permanent. They're shuttering all of the environmental justice offices across the country. They're laying off half of the workforce at the Department of Education. They've effectively dismantled the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. So already we're seeing a government shutdown, and it's illegal. So we need really need senators to step up, reject this dirty bill, and to work to pass something that will rein in these illegal actions, to reclaim their constitutional power to control spending, and to make sure that these essential services are kept open to protect our agencies working to make sure we have safe water and reliable food.
You know, Mary Grant, I get that in fact there is already illegal government shutdown taking place right before our eyes, and this is a nonpartisan issue. I just think we all want clean water. We all want, you know, clean wastewater treatment. You know, who would be against that? Those who might want to privatize. Mary Grant, before we say so long for the morning, can you tell folks, make sure that I haven't missed anything that you want to tell folks?
Sure. We didn't dive into the budget. I know you asked about that before.
Oh, go ahead.
But that's a whole nother process that's happening. It's also in the Senate right now, but we really feel it only needs 50 votes in the Senate. This is the plan that we think will try to make legal some of the illegal actions that are happening by Musk and Trump to gut our federal government. It will slash funding for essential programs, including food assistance, in order to pay for massive tax cuts that largely benefit billionaires and corporations. So we are also urging no on this massive budget cut. So the resolution right now is at the Senate to try to conform with what the House already passed. But we really, after that, it'll go to committees to actually mark up the actual details of the bill. So we'll know more. And then it'll go back to the House and the Senate for votes. So we have multiple opportunities to stop this. And we think that the best way to stop it would be in the House, because of the margins are so narrow, and it's such an issue that people are hearing about already, about cuts to Medicaid, about cuts to food assistance, SNAP benefits, to cuts to school lunches for children. It's horrible, the idea that you would take away food from children in order to fund tax cuts from billionaires. So again, we think that that too can be stopped. It's early on in the process. I know it feels kind of overwhelming that it's already passed the House. It passed like by one vote, really, in the House. So we think that there might be room to stop it as it goes along and we get more details of what it'll look like for people.
I appreciate that, all of this context, because it is overwhelming. I'm speaking with Mary Grant, who is the director of the Food and Water for All program at Food and Water Watch. And I appreciate how hopeful you sound in the face of this. But again, I do think that that there are members of Congress who, on both sides of the aisle, who would not agree with this. They are afraid, and we're looking for some courageous folks, right?
Yes. We need people to stand up and to fight for their constituents, for people in their communities, because at the end of the day, that's who's going to be hurt, who's going to lose access to food assistance at a time when food prices are so high, who's going to lose access to clean water. So we really need Congress members to actually represent the people they were elected to represent.
Yes, we're looking for profiles and courage. We will not forget you, and ask you to stand up for your constituents. Wherever you are, red or blue states. Hey, thank you, Mary. It was great to talk with you this morning. And you can read more and learn more about all of this at the Food and Water Watch website. Thank you. It's been great talking with you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
We're going to just hear a little bit of music, and then we'll come back with that piece from WORT News. Thank you. So yesterday, UW-Madison students staged a walkout in support of Mahmoud Khalil, the Palestinian student who was arrested, who was one of the organizers at Columbia University. Here's a story about that from WORT News.
Free Palestine!
Free Palestine!
Free Palestine!
Free Palestine!
Free Palestine!
Roughly 100 students gathered at the UW-Madison Library Mall this afternoon to protest the recent arrest of Mahmoud Khalil. Khalil was a key spokesperson in last spring's pro-Palestine protests on the Columbia University campus. Khalil was arrested by ICE agents on Saturday and is currently being held at an ICE detention center in Louisiana. He hasn't been charged with any crime, and the reason for the arrest of a lawful permanent resident is unclear.
The abduction of Mahmoud Khalil was illegal by U.S. law. But that doesn't matter. That literally doesn't matter because the laws are words on a piece of paper if we don't fight for them.
Speakers at today's protest included Dalia Saba, a prominent member of the Students for Justice in Palestine organization. I also had the opportunity to speak with Kareem, a recent UW-Madison graduate and fellow SJP member, who shed further light on the motivations behind the protest.
Really, this protest is it's an act of solidarity with Palestinians, with Mahmoud Khalil, but it's also sending a message to the university that we're not going to let them silence us and or prevent us from exercising our basic constitutional rights, including freedom of speech, freedom of assembly.
Yesterday, UW-Madison, along with 60 other universities nationwide, received a letter from the Department of Education warning of, quote, potential enforcement action, unquote, if they do not sufficiently combat anti-Semitism on campus. The Trump administration demands that these universities make efforts to quell pro-Palestine movements among their students or potentially see their federal funding cut.
We have seen from Columbia that there is no amount of brutality that a university can inflict upon its students that is enough for the Trump administration. Right. Columbia has consistently attacked, punished, and stripped away the rights of the Palestinian students on their campus and their allies, and still they had their funding cut. So from here, UW-Madison has a very easy choice. Does UW-Madison want to be the type of school that, in the face of fascism, collaborates with the fascists and probably still gets their funding cut?
No.
Or will it stand up for the rights of its students? I'm going to be honest, I'm not optimistic about UW-Madison's track record.
In a statement released today, UW-Madison spokesperson John Lucas asserted that the university continues to cooperate with any federal investigations and is committed to, quote, supporting its Jewish badgers, free expression, and helping all students feel a sense of belonging, unquote. Earlier today, 14 members of the U.S. House penned a letter calling for Khalil's release. They echoed the same sentiment as the UW-Madison protesters today, characterizing his detention an, quote, attempt to criminalize political protest, unquote, and a, quote, direct assault on freedom of speech, unquote.
When immigrant rights are under attack, what do we do?
Stand up, fight back!
What do we do?
Stand up, fight back!
What do we do?
Stand up, fight back!
Reporting for WORT News, I'm Croenic Ramines.
And so Khalil was arrested on Saturday. On Monday, his attorney had brought his case before a U.S. federal judge, and that judge ordered that Khalil could not be deported for now. And there's a hearing then that was set on Monday for today, Wednesday, 11:30 a.m. Eastern time. So this morning in a little bit, Khalil will be back in federal court to see if he can be returned from Louisiana to his family. Just to update on that, thank you for tuning in this morning. Thank you to Dave Lawrenson, a music producer and engineer. I'm Jan Miyasaki, and I will talk with you next week.
And it's just about 9 o'clock. You're listening to WORT 89.9 FM, Madison. Coming up next, Surgeon Radio Kiosk. And then Nate's in the house without a clarinet. Come on, Nate. So stay tuned for some different country music.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Wednesday, March 12th. This is Bird Note.
So I get home, I make myself a cup of coffee, I enter my data. When I take a shower, when I close my eyes so the shampoo doesn't get in, I'm still seeing lines of ducks flying behind my eyes.
Allison Velog has worked for half a decade as a fall and spring water bird counter at remote migration hotspots around Lake Superior. For weeks, every day from sunrise to nearly sunset, Allison is outside in frigid and volatile weather, identifying species from afar and tallying them with a clicker.
You're just at the mercy of the elements and the wind. And it is exhausting to not only be out in brutal Lake Superior elements, but also paying attention all day and searching for movement.
Bad weather days are more reason for her to come in than to call out.
We're studying ducks and loons, birds that are associated with water, and rain and bad weather doesn't really make them stop flying. In fact, some of my most amazing flights have happened during some of the most miserable weather conditions.
Working close.